everybody. Welcome to episode number 132 of the Between the Cracks podcast. I am your host, Bill. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Chris. Chris, I am so very excited about tonight's episode because for the first time in BTC history, I am recording from within the spanking new BTCRFRT. That's right, Chris. The Between the Cracks Research Facility Renaissance Tower.
Oh, that's a mouthful.
Yes. In other words, Chris, I'm recording from my bedroom. I am no longer outside in the office area. I am now inside my house where I am perched oh so high above the BTCRF. So in some ways, Chris, you may say I'm sort of a beacon of hope perched up here in new BTCRFRT.
Oh, brother.
Well, that segues quite nicely in tonight's story, doesn't it?
Oh, we worked a long time on that opening, didn't we, Chris?
Yeah, all of about 3 minutes, which is probably equates to around the amount of research we've done on this case.
Yes, indeed. But you are correct, Chris. It's a perfect segue because tonight, bud, we are headed to the Oregon coast to discuss one of the most, I'm going to say it, the craziest, most intense looking lighthouses I have ever seen in my life. And we're going to find out that it's just not the looks alone that make this place so creepy. Not at all. But tonight we are discussing the one and only Tillamook Rock Lighthouse. Now, I'm going to ask you, Chris, because you're a resident visual description expert. Before we get into the history and we start kind of unveiling all the things about Tillamook Lighthouse, I'm going to ask you, because this lighthouse is so unique looking, can you give our listeners a brief description as far as what you see when you look at Old Tilly?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because this is a little bit unusual for most lighthouses we see, because this lighthouse is perched up on top of what appears to be just a giant rock, and that's really all it is.
Well, dude, this thing looks like Alcatraz.
Yes, it's like a mini version of what Alcatraz is. Basically, all this is a big rock that's located 1.2 miles from shore. And then at the very tip top of it, you just basically see this little building, which is the lighthouse. I have to tell you, I'm not sure exactly how you get up to the lighthouse, because if you're looking at this thing, it looks like you have to climb a mountain.
We were talking about that because, yes, it's in the middle of the ocean here. There's no platform or anywhere to dock, okay? It looks very treacherous. And the other thing I noticed in all these pictures, that the waves seem to go higher than the lighthouse itself. You know how oftentimes when you see lighthouses and the waves are crashing into them, you know, maybe it hits the bottom of the lighthouse a little bit, but no, I mean, I'm seeing pictures here where this thing is just totally succumbed by a wave. It's crazy.
One of the first pictures you're going to see is basically a giant wave completely engulfing. And I don't even mean just engulfing. It goes what looks like maybe 20 or 30 feet above the lighthouse.
Yeah, fuck
that. I mean, if you happen to be outside at the moment a wave like this strikes, you're gone.
Oh, and we find out that that's happened once or twice before on this little island. But yeah, like I was saying, man, there is no place to dock. It's just a rugged coastline. And I mean, the little island or rock itself looks nearly impossible to climb. So if you are lucky enough to even dock your boat here and you get onto this little island, you have to make your way up this rocky coast. And then at that point, if you've made it this far, then there are a set of stairs, which, I mean, they look like they're a mile high if they're an inch.
And not to mention, I can't imagine in the wintertime trying to do, what if you tried to come up those stairs and you get up, you know, maybe towards the top and you take one wrong step and you slip and my man, you plinko down all the way into the ocean.
Well, look at that thing. Yeah, man, you're sliding right down. You're going right into the rock and right into the ocean. But we should mention, too, before we get into the deep, rich history of Tillamook Lighthouse, in this surrounding area off the Oregon coast here in the Pacific Ocean, there's a lot of marine life. And I've noticed in quite a few videos that sea lions seals and different birds all seem to call Tillamook Lighthouse home, or at least they like to bask in the sun there, or take refuge there from other sea creatures. Because, Chris, what I'm being so coy about is that we know seal, and possibly sea lion, is a favorite delicacy of the great white shark. And brother, we know the Pacific Northwest is their playground.
Yes, that is true indeed. The great white shark is all along the West Coast. And I have a bit of information in front of me here, a little disconcerting. If trying to get up to the lighthouse wasn't bad enough, if you just so happen to end up falling into the ocean, well, it seems that there has been 28 recorded unprovoked shark attacks in Oregon. Well, 27 of them involved great white sharks.
Jesus. And then, lest we forget, our friends the beautiful orcas are swimming around this area as well.
We all know what they're capable of if anyone recalls one of our episodes that we did not so long ago.
Oddly enough, Tillicum. He ate the balls right off that guy that snuck in there in the middle of the night.
Well, let's be fair. Maybe the wild orcas are more friendly, right? Tillicum was, an orca held in captivity. Perhaps that definitely has a role in how they act. But I can't help but think about the videos we've seen in the past of wild orcas throwing seals up in the air 30, 40 feet like it's a goddamn volleyball. And, you know, I got to tell you, getting thrown in the air 30 feet only to land in the mouth of a great white shark doesn't seem like a fate that I would want to meet.
Not at all. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the orcas, I think there's only been one attack, documented attack on humans in the wild. But yeah, I mean, you lock those poor things up, man. They're going to get crazy. You put them in prison. But of course, we're not here to talk about orcas. Please. Well, I mean, we were already wasted who knows how long. We've got to get into the history of Tillamook Rock Lighthouse. Now, bud, I'm going to ask you right here and right now, would you mind giving the wonderful listeners out in podcast land just a brief synopsis of the lighthouse, and then we can get into some of the more unfortunate events that have taken place through the years. Sweet baby Tilly boy, Tillamook Rock Lighthouse, what you got for us?
Oh, that's a lovely nickname. And in fact, one of the nicknames of Tillamook Rock Light. It was also known as Terrible Tilly, which after we get through the details, you'll know why. But this piece of rock, which is basically just a giant piece of basalt rock, is where the Tillamook Rock Lighthouse resides at the top. And the height of this lighthouse is 62 feet. Now, I'm not sure if that's from the base of the rock. I'm going to assume that it is up to the top of the lighthouse. But this lighthouse first lit its beacon on January 21st of 1881. But it was in 1878, actually, that the U.S. Congress appropriated about $50,000 for this lighthouse to be built. So after the U.S. Has appropriated this money, they, of course, have to survey this rock. And let me tell you, it's no surprise that the surveyors determined that it was damn near impossible to get access to the rock. As you can imagine, it's treacherous and almost impossible to dock on, let alone having to deal with the waves crashing around it, I'm sure, made it quite the feat to actually land on the rock.
I mean, we talked about this in the beginning, man. It's like I'm looking at this lighthouse from in various different pictures from different angles, and I'm just not seeing anywhere even remotely close to a section where it would be safe to dock. I'm just really not understanding how these lighthouse keepers were even able to make their way to this lighthouse. I mean, that's how treacherous this thing looks.
Well, not only that, but the top of this rock wasn't just a level area to start building. They had to actually blast at the top of it. And can you imagine, dude, where do you have to go during the blast to get away from just rock flying everywhere?
in all honesty, this is just an accident waiting to happen. But you had mentioned, I mean, you know, being they received this federal funding, I mean, they had to do their due diligence, right? I mean, I'm reading here that they sent out a number of surveyors from time to time to kind of analyze how things were going, didn't they?
They did indeed. And, well, third time wasn't the charm here, is because we find out that in September of 1879, John Trewavis was sent to do another survey. Unfortunately for him, he was overtaken by a large swell, which is quite common with the area around this rock. And, well, he was never seen nor heard from again.
If you look at this rock and the lighthouse itself, I mean, it looks huge, right? I mean, it's this huge presence sticking out of the ocean. What did you say the height of it was?
So the actual lighthouse itself had a 62-foot tower, but it looks to be 133 feet above sea level. So I'm assuming roughly 70 of that feet is the rock. And then on top of that is the tower.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Chris, but I'm looking at this. We keep calling it a rock, which it is, but it looks more like an island, doesn't it? That's how big this thing is.
Right. It definitely looks big enough to be an island, but it is completely rock. There's no grass, nothing. It's just all a big, giant piece of basalt rock. Granted, I get the location is a nice spot for a lighthouse, being 1.2 miles off the coast. And at the height they're going to make this tower, it has a visibility range of 18 miles. So, yes, that would make it a good spot, but I don't know. This just doesn't seem worth it.
Maybe they would have been better off just putting some signs out there, just like, watch out for the rock or something, you know? But, yeah, man.
Or just don't travel on that part of the fucking coast.
Yeah, I mean, stay out an extra mile. Jesus. Our surveyor here, old Johnny, man, he got swept out to sea by a rogue wave. And like you said, he was never seen or heard from again. Because the water crashing against this rock here, it's just way too treacherous, man. You're going to fall in there and you're just going to get knocked all around. Who knows what kind of currents or riptides are there. You're as good as dead once you hit the water.
And not to mention that the sharks that we were talking about. But it's interesting, too, because obviously, granted that this guy has died, they needed some sort of replacement. So there's this guy by the name of Charles A. Ballantyne. He was assigned to go back out there, but he couldn't recruit workers because they all heard what happened to John.
So right from the start, things are not looking good.
Not at all. And yes, the U.S. Congress decides in 1878 this is a good spot, and by September 1879, someone dies. News spreads far and wide, and people are like, you know, screw you, I'm not going to go out there just to freaking be lost out to sea. Ballantyne actually, you know, eventually, of course, has to find somebody, and he does. He finds a group of quarrymen who, by the way, knew nothing about this. they happen to know nothing about the tragedy. He basically found anybody who hadn't heard that this guy was killed out there, and they agreed to it. This is the point where they have to figure out transportation to and from this rock. And in May of 1880, they were able to actually completely blast the top. And then that's when the construction of the foundation began.
They found guys to go out there and work. Construction began. They laid the foundation. Things were starting to look up, kind of. And I say kind of because there was a group that went out there to work. And once they were out there on the rock, it's noted that their stay was somewhat unpleasant because during another massive storm, the crew got stuck there for 2 weeks without any food or extra clothing. All their supplies were swept away back into the ocean. They're lucky they didn't go in with it. They were stuck there for 2 weeks without any way to communicate that they needed help, and the entire crew came very close to starving. Just in these first few years, there's just an amazing amount of tragedy and horrific things taking place. But, none as horrific as what took place on the 12th of January, 1881.
Okay, what happened?
18. one.
Aaron told us that already.
Chris, because on January 12th of 1881, that is when the bark... Now, for our listeners, you may not know what a bark is, much like myself right now because I'm looking it up. A bark, a B-A-R-Q-U-E or a B-A-R-C, is a type of sailing vessel with three or more masts. It's basically your old-time-looking pirate ship, or it's like one of those ships that used to be in a bottle. Remember they used to sell a ship in a bottle?
Yeah.
Like a souvenir. It's one of those.
So, it's exactly one of those.
Yes. So, I mean, that's what we're talking about here. So this bark, or the ship, known as the Lipetia, was sailing in very thick fog and high winds yet again, right off this Oregon coast. For some reason, this is just the most treacherous waterway I've ever read about in my life. My God. So the high winds get a hold of the ship, and the captain of the ship noticed that they were a little too close to the shore, bud. Not only did the captain notice that they were too close to shore, Chris, a number of the guys that were on the island, still working construction, they heard voices coming from the sea. That's right. They heard the crew of the Lupatia actually screaming and panicking that they were too close to shore, too close to this rock. The guys on the island, they started screaming and lighting every lantern that they could just to warn the ship that they were getting so close to this rock. And in addition to that, because they even lit a bonfire. So I mean, they must have had a little bit of time here. They lit a bonfire to let the ship know that it was approximately 600 feet from the rock. And if you hit this thing, you're going down, right? And unfortunately, we find out that that may be the case here. Because the ship appeared, at least, to have been able to turn itself back towards the sea to get away from the rock. But it was at that point that the Lupatia then disappeared into the thick night fog. And from that point forward, the voices of the crew were heard no more. So you got to think that maybe, just maybe through the grace of God, they were able to navigate themselves away from this rock and therefore get pushed at the sea. And, you know, with the dense fog, you can't make out where they are. And as they drift further and further away, you can no longer hear the voices. So you're expecting that maybe, just maybe, we're going to have a happy ending here. But no, Chris, that would not be the case. And this is horrifying. Because the following day, all 16 crew members that were on board Lupatia, their bodies were found washed up on shore of Tillamook Head. All 16 bodies. I've read that there were 14 bodies and two had gone missing, but nonetheless, 14 to 16 corpses coming onto shore. That's absolutely horrifying. But there was one lone survivor, Chris, and that was the dog, the crew's dog. The dog itself was the lone survivor of this shipwreck.
Wow. I actually wonder how they discovered it. Did the dog just like swim to shore?
Probably, yeah.
That's crazy. I don't know how anybody returned to this lighthouse after that happened. Mind you, the lighthouse officially opens a mere 8 or 9 days later on January 21st after all of this just happened.
We got to move forward.
They officially opened the lighthouse. I mean, maybe this situation perhaps made them justify even more the fact that there needed to be a lighthouse there. But like, my God, I can't imagine being, I have to be one of the keepers of this lighthouse after seeing that happen right in front of you.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. The weather alone has got to be nearly intolerable for anybody to be around. I mean, there's isolation and then there's isolation, right? Because, you know, you can be on a lighthouse and admire these beautiful views, be outside gardening, do whatever you may do to keep yourself occupied. But the weather here and the waves are so treacherous. It's almost like you have to be locked inside these quarters. And these keepers' quarters were abnormally large for the time. I think they had upwards of 8 rooms. And at any given point in time, there were 3 to 4 lighthouse keepers on duty together, right? So at least you had your coworkers, but my God, if you don't like them, Jesus Christ, that's a fate worse than death.
Or like you were saying, I mean, what if there's just an extended period of time where the water is just not safe to travel through because of a storm or something, and you're just stuck there?
I mean, it's only a mile off coast, but my God, it might as well be on another planet. I mean, this water's so treacherous. There's no surviving it if you fall in. There's just no surviving.
Eventually, they end up setting up a telephone line. Thank God for anybody who's out there that needs to call for help. We find out that shortly after, in 1897, was when they actually installed this thing. Shortly after, a storm cuts the telephone line.
Dude, these waves are just, they're magnificent. My God. So get this. In 1934, Chris, a hurricane strength storm threw a boulder high, lifted it in the air, threw it high enough and hard enough that it broke the lighthouse lens. Dude, I mean, it's picking up a huge boulder as if it's a marble and chucking the thing into the friggin' lighthouse.
And I think they said that that winds reached 109 miles per hour. I gotta tell you, 62-foot tower and big lighthouse building or not, if you hear 109 mile per hour winds whistling outside that building, I'd have to be concerned about whether or not that tower is going to be there the next morning.
Yeah, you're not kidding. I mean, you step outside, you'll be wearing your balls on your ass.
You'll be, if you're lucky, the wind's blowing towards shore and you'll get thrown right into Oregon.
But yeah, man, I mean, so there was just so many things that went wrong right from the start. But with that said, we all know that any location that sees its fair share of suffering and tragic events, oftentimes, little buddy, there seems to be bizarre paranormal activity associated with said location. Wouldn't you say?
I think that's a fair observation that perhaps something else of the apparition sort might be also calling Tillamook home.
So let's dive into this aspect of it a little bit, Chris, because there's a number of people that insist that Tillicum Rock Lighthouse is indeed haunted, and there are various accounts, but I was figuring maybe we just focus on a few. And the ones that I find very interesting is that of ghost ships. Now, a number of the lighthouse keepers that worked on the island here stated that in a dense fog, they noticed ships seemingly appear out of nowhere. Now, we've talked about ghost ships before on the show. It's a very fascinating topic, but it makes you wonder, could there be any validity to that? Or could it just be their minds playing tricks on them due to the severe isolation? Now, Chris, I mean, the paranormal activity or experiences are not limited to the sea. Oh, no, buddy. There have been encounters that have taken place inside the lighthouse itself. Now, seeing a ghost ship go by, that's one thing. Yeah, I'd be freaked out, but it disappears. I'll just run back inside and go up into the tower and keep an eye out for it. However, once you start encountering these entities inside the lighthouse, that's a whole new ballgame, isn't it?
Oh, it is indeed. If you can't find refuge inside that building, my man, it's time to go.
So, Chris, let's get into it a little bit. Can you just give us a brief synopsis of some of the encounters?
Yes. So, apparently, there were various accounts of ghosts or even somebody whispering something in your ear. I think this...
Hi, Chris.
Hi. So, aside from some of the scarier ones, there's actually a rather comical one here. Apparently, one of the a new keeper at the time said that there was an awful ghost that would chase him up the stairs. But the keeper says he put an end to that real quick because he pushed the ghost back down the stairs.
Oh, damn!
Something tells me that's the last time that ghost did any chasing. I'm sure he broke his legs.
But let me ask you this, though, Chris. I mean, if a ghost is nothing but a transparent kind of being, How exactly did he push the said ghost?
Something tells me perhaps one of the other keepers was playing a trick on him, perhaps just dressed in a white sheet. And unfortunately, he went tumbling down the stairs.
And that was another death associated with the Tillamook Lighthouse. But I'm thinking here, dude, that in all honesty, that this has to be more related to the isolation. And that's really scary, man. That's creepy how your mind can kind of play tricks with you like that. Like you're so isolated and, you know, you're looking for any kind of way to communicate or interact with anybody or anything. So your mind kind of creates these scenarios or these images that aren't there just to kind of keep itself active in a way.
Well, that's certainly not the way I would like to keep my mind active, but yes,
not at all.
There's too many things about the history of this place to not have a thought jump into your mind of that perhaps it's haunted. And when you're alone, climbing a set of stairs on top of a 62-foot tower, I can't help but think that that would cross my mind as well. And you mentioned the sea lions and stuff that are also hopping onto this rock and stuff. You know, it's foggy. You're looking out the window and you see what looks like a person just standing at the end of the rock looking up at you. And who knows? Maybe it's just a sea lion that jumped up there, but it's too far away for you to tell what it is. And then in an instant, it's gone. You know, there's certain things like that. I feel like if you're looking out off of the foggy area where anything could look like anything in that moment, because it just, your view is just obscured. It's just too easy for your mind to play tricks on you and just think that there's somebody standing out there. And I hope that no one ever had to spend a night there alone. I know there was several quarters and hopefully more than three people at a time hanging out there, but that is a thing of nightmares.
Dude, you bring up a good point about the sea lions, like them sleeping on the rock at night. And if you ever hear them, it almost sounds like they're moaning, or it could sound, or it could be mistaken as a human screaming or someone being in pain, you know? So that's a very good point, that it could add to the illusion that there's more going on than there actually is. But speaking about going crazy, apparently there was a new lighthouse keeper that came on board there, and he couldn't take the isolation. Chris, it says here that he had to be taken away in a straitjacket because he went so crazy from the ghostly experiences that he was encountering within the lighthouse.
Jesus. And again, like you're saying, like that could have just all been in his head, but once it gets in there, man, it doesn't come out.
Well, now they're actually saying that this poor little lighthouse keeper that got taken away in a straitjacket, his ghost now haunts Tillamook Lighthouse.
Good grief.
I mean, what's going on here?
I don't know, but I would not want to find out.
But I had one more that I wanted to bring up before we wrap it up here. And this was on the that article, The Legend of Terrible Tilly, from the Clatsop News. And I'm going to read this one verbatim here, because this one freaks me out. And it's about a hidden room. I don't know about you, but I don't like hidden rooms. If I'm exploring somewhere and I come across something that's not supposed to be there, like a hidden door, and there's a leads to another room, that type of stuff creeps me out. I don't like it. But anyway, there was a lighthouse keeper that apparently he was roaming around one night, and he was exploring the lighthouse, and it says here that he found a door to a room that he had not noticed before. Opening the door with apprehension and curiosity, in a place like this, that's a bad idea. He entered to find a library of sorts, likely meant to keep previous keepers company. He found a book on lighthouses and sat down and began to read it. Coincidentally, it told of a keeper in a lighthouse in the Caribbean who had experienced almost the same kind of ghostly encounters that these lighthouse keepers at Tillamook Rock Lighthouse were experiencing. And apparently one of the quotes that he read from the book said that on certain nights, low, chilling groans or heard from the stair cylinder leading to the lantern. So basically, Chris, they're saying that they experienced the same moans that they read about in this book. So basically what they're saying here, the ghostly apparitions that they're encountering and the experiences that they're having were almost taking place nearly identical as they were in this book.
No way. No fucking way.
And why was the room hidden, Chris? How did these guys not know it was there?
I don't know. And even if these things didn't happen, if you read a book like that, now you're sure as hell going to think that that might happen to you. So that's a rabbit hole you do not want to go down.
You're not kidding, man. I mean, it's scary enough to be in this place by yourself, but then all of a sudden you start finding these creepy little rooms with these library books. Just reading step by step would actually just happen to you. Jesus. But, Chris, I mean, you know, we got to move forward here, man, because if we stay put, we're never going to get done here tonight. So let's move forward right to the end. On September 1st, 1957, the lighthouse was finally, and through the grace of God, inactivated. That couldn't be any better news to the lighthouse keepers. My goodness.
And I was reading here, due to the expenses and repairs to this lighthouse over time with all the storms and stuff, that the lighthouse ends up being replaced with a whistle buoy. And it marks... Imagine that's all they had to do. Just throw a fucking buoy out there. It ends up becoming the most expensive U.S. lighthouse to operate.
Jesus. But you brought up something interesting before we started recording. The island itself was purchased a few times by private investors, and they used it at one point for something very interesting, didn't they?
Oh my God. If this wasn't creepy enough, yes, these investors end up buying this to create something called a columbarium, and it was known as the Eternity at Sea Columbarium, which is basically nothing more than a location that stores the cremated remains of people. And I think it ended up having about 30 of these urns stored inside of this place.
I mean, could there be a worse place for this?
I mean, I guess if you want to have your immortal remains in a location that has a nice view, I get it.
Well, don't people like to have their ashes spread out at sea? Because at some point or another, it's going to happen.
Well, yeah, one of those waves hits that fucking place, and they will be spread out to sea. But we ashes do find out...
to ashes. Dust to dust.
Okay. I see how that's relevant. But we actually find out that the license for this columbarium was revoked in 99. I wonder why. Perhaps... due to the travel to and fro, might end up finding yourself in an urn yourself.
the family dies just trying to get the urn to the rock?
Seriously.
So, Chris, let's do it. Let's wrap it up the way we always do. I'm going to ask you here, with everything we talked about tonight, all the claims from the characters in our story tonight, what says you, based on the history and all the events that have taken place at beautiful Tillamook Rock Lighthouse, do you think that there's any validity to the claims that this place may be haunted? I say, Chris.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I'm trying to get to that. I will have to say that if ever a place were to be haunted, I think this place would be. There is just too many tragedies involved with this piece of land, both before the building and whilst it was built. I mean, Jesus, right up to the week before the lighthouse was officially lit and became a lighthouse, there was that shipwreck. I mean, there's just too much here. I would have to agree that this place could be haunted. Yeah.
Well,
that says you, Jimmy.
Well, Jimmy thinks that he agrees with you. If there is such thing as hauntings, this place is definitely it. But, I mean, you couple that with just how dangerous this place is. I mean, you can't even get to it. Never mind escaping it. So, I mean, if you're lucky enough just to make it to this, or unlucky enough to make it to this island, how the hell are you getting back off?
Well, it's funny you say that, because apparently the only practical way to access this place now is via helicopter.
Is that true?
Yeah, it says right here.
Oh, my God. Yeah, man, F this place. I'm with you, Chris. I mean, there's just been too much death and tragedy. Just too many unfortunate events. And you know what gets me, too, is the mental aspect of it. Because I feel like a lot of these lighthouse keepers, they must have gone mad. In all seriousness, they must have gone absolutely crazy being isolated in an area like that. Because when you're in the middle of a storm, you can't even go outside and get some fresh air or whatnot and enjoy the scenery. You're just stuck in there, man, with boulders smashing against the thing, thinking you're going to die with nobody to talk to.
Yeah, with that kind of anxiety and fear on your mind, your mind's going to make up loads of shit. I mean, this is literally a nightmare to work this lighthouse.
Yes, no matter what they pay, it's just not worth it. But Chris, that's it, man. That is the case of Tillamook Rock Lighthouse, a.k.a. Terrible Tilly. So Chris, let me shine this beacon oh so brightly and give the rundown tonight so we can get the hell out of here. You want to get in touch with us, you can reach us at btcpod2020@gmail.com, or you can get in touch with us on Facebook or Instagram, Between the Cracks Podcast. If you would like to become one of our lovely patrons, please feel free to do so by clicking on the link in the show notes. And Chris, I forgot to mention, we actually have a new patron.
Whoa.
Yes, Anne from North Carolina. Anne Thomas, thank you very, very, very much. I've contacted Anne, and I've asked her if there are any topics she would like us to cover, and I'm waiting to hear back from her. She said she would think about it, and I did tell her that we hope to have a more consistent schedule as we get back on track here, but in all honesty, who the hell knows? But if you would like to become one of our lovely patrons like Anne, please feel free to do so by clicking on the link in the show notes. We appreciate each and every one of you guys. So, Chris, with all that said, and without any further ado, what do you say we wish the fine, fine people out in podcast land the fondest a farewell?
Tilly.
All right, 66 minutes, I don't think it's that bad.
No, man, pretty good. We didn't really
have
to fuck up so much.
All right, cool, man. All right, thanks, bro.
All right.
Nope.